And I think with that strategy, it's possible to move from a junior role to a senior role, because hard work does pay off and you do get sort of the recognition for that. But when it comes to leadership, then all of a sudden it's not about the hard work and it's not about the hard skills or the knowledge, or then it becomes about the person. And when it's about the person, then obviously bias has a huge role.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast. On today's episode of the Oops, I'm Biased podcast, I am talking to Sergio Bandei. After leaving his career in banking, in first in the Netherlands and then in Singapore, he founded Roots Inspire, which is an organization that offers talent management solutions for ethnically diverse talent in leadership. And this is exactly what we're going to talk about today. How can we bring more ethnically diverse talent into leadership positions? What does it take? And why is there such a big gap, but also such a big obstacle to making leadership teams more diverse? We're going to talk about, well, the biggest reasons for companies not having diverse leaderships, what usually goes wrong in recruitment, but also in talent development. And we're going to talk about if it's enough to provide equal chances to every candidate to bring more diversity into companies' leaderships. As Sergio pointed out, asking the question already provides the answers. I can tell you it is a huge part. Recruitment and unbiased recruitment is a big part of it, but it might not be the whole story to answer this question. And lastly, he's going to share really nice strategies, what recruitment managers and HR professionals like you can do to increase diversity at the top level and make it sustainable, so you're not hurting your cause by bringing in diversity without the needed support that they might need. So without further ado, I really hope you enjoy this episode. All right. Today I am here with Sergio Bandei. Sergio, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Katharina. Pleasure to be on and looking forward to the conversation.
Very happy to have you. Also very much looking forward to cover a topic that we haven't covered yet, and it's been on my list for a while now. We're going to talk today about ethnically diverse talent in leadership, which I believe is your, well, one of your many areas of expertise. I won't steal your thunder. So would you please introduce yourself to our audience and what it is that you do?
Yeah, so my journey is a bit of a weird one, but also, it's become very interesting. No, so I've how I introduced myself, I was born in Suriname, but my mom is from Curaçao, so I have very mixed roots. Grew up in the Netherlands since I was two, and somehow ended up in banking, and then spent 10 years in Amsterdam in banking. Then I moved to Singapore, so 8 more years in Singapore, doing various different things, always on the commercial side. I've led sort of product teams or our clients on the client side as well. And then in 2020, when the murder on George Floyd happened, I was very far away from the discussion. And it really triggered me to see, like, okay, you know, I have all these emotions and thoughts and ideas. What can I do with it? And also, what can we do about it? Right. So that's when I started Roots Inspire. And I guess we have some more time to talk about sort of what that is and what we do. But I've been on the last 3 years on a completely different journey away from banking. As a social entrepreneur, trying to change the world, and hopefully, we can be successful at that.
Yeah, thank you for that introduction. Was it a difficult shift out of banking into becoming an entrepreneur, especially given the climate of, a whole discussion and onslaught of talking about racism and Black Lives Matter? Was that a difficult shift, or was it quite easy for you personally?
So what was easy in that journey is that the bank I was working for, ABN AMRO, they retreated back to Europe. So all the foreign offices closed. So that gave me quite some time to do the shifts, right? Because I was asked to help them in sort of the build down in Singapore. So I was kept on for another year to run, some projects there. So in that sense, it made the transition easier. But yeah, in terms of the entrepreneurial life, yeah, that's like a whole different kind of stress and, exciting as well. It's what is weird to me that in this world, I feel like in my banking job, I was getting paid huge amounts of money for not adding that much value, real value, right? It's just pushing papers. And now I feel like I'm really changing. Well, with the platform, we're really changing people's lives. So adding tremendous amounts of value. But that doesn't mean you get paid like big amounts of salary every month. So that is interesting that in this world that adding value and getting paid for that has nothing to do with each other, apparently. But it's been cool. It's been almost, it's been sort of a calling. Like once you go down this path and you see the impact you're making and you see the potential it has to really make change, it's like you cannot do it, right?
Yeah, no, it's hugely rewarding. I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's been an amazing learning journey. And I think that corporate experience helps a lot when you become an entrepreneur, because in the end, it's about stakeholders and managing people and getting people along in your vision and journey. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Great what you said there. I want to put my hook into this, talking about corporate experience. And talking about the topic at hand, so diverse senior management, diverse ethnically diverse leadership, what do you see as the biggest reason for that huge lack of ethnically diverse leadership or people with diverse backgrounds in leadership?
Yeah, so it's been like that my whole career, right? So in my whole career, I've sort of been the only one in the room or one of the very few. And not just on the banking side, but also on client side. And it's also been remarkable how I know a lot of talent, ethnic talent, that I maybe studied with or that I grew up with or that I met along the way. And if you look at where they are now, then a lot of people have left the corporate world. Some have settled for jobs that I think are way, that are definitely not their maximum potential. And at the same time, as you rise to more the leadership levels, you see there's so much mediocrity there. So there's great people in leadership, but there's also a lot of mediocre people that sort of were able to ride the wave. So the system is definitely broken. It's not a system where talent prevails. And I think the reason for that is human nature. I think we just navigate to people that look like us, me as well, like all of us. If we look at, our life partners or our group of friends, it's very much people that we feel safe with, comfortable with, that we know and understand and trust because they are very similar to us. And that's fine. But the problem is if in leadership, there's too much of a, just one group represented, then it also doesn't allow other talent in. So I very much see it as an organizational problem. rather than, you know, a problem of one group versus the other group. And I think it's something that you need to step in and you need to, you know, top down control, take action on, because it's not solving itself.
Yeah. You touched on a very important topic, and we talk at length on this podcast about bias, whether it's a similarity bias, as you just mentioned. We trust people more who are more alike ourselves, whether that's in appearance, in experience, in where they come from, which is a very human thing. That doesn't mean it's right, and it doesn't mean that it gives equal opportunities to everyone. And as you say, I think the system in a way is broken where talent is not recognized because of those stereotypes and because of those preconceived notions. And I think it's a very apt analysis of you to say it's a company problem. It's not a this group versus this group, or who do we prop up more problem. It's really about, well, how can we change the system and change the narrative in people's minds. I think that's what we try to do on this podcast a lot. That's why I love having you on today for this discussion.
Yeah, and just to jump on that a little bit more, I think that's also, you know, the whole diversity and inclusion discussion has been sort of, the narrative has been sort of, you know, a victim versus perpetrator role, and all these, you know, bad white heterosexual men that don't allow anyone else in their little boys club. But I don't think that's the right way to approach it, right? Like, to me, it's like, okay, now what? Like I said, it's human nature. You can't really point your finger and say you're wrong. But you do have to tell people, like, okay, there's so much upside, right? There's such a large talent pool that is underinvested, untapped. And if we're able to unlock that talent, then it increases the pie. And then the organization benefits, society benefits, everyone benefits. And hopefully that's a narrative that people can get behind, rather than, you know, making people feel bad because they've made decisions that are biased. But we all have these biases.
Yeah, it's about that awareness piece. Indeed. Now that we're talking about systems and how they just historically and also, well, right at this moment, just don't. Let me rephrase this. Systems that gatekeep chances from historically marginalized, underrepresented groups. I heard you talk about already people climbing the corporate ladder, getting up and riding that wave. Can you pinpoint where it goes wrong on the one hand in recruitment, but also in development for ethnic talent to just not get those chances? Do you see if there's yes, a specific point?
Yes. So I think there's different bottlenecks. Getting into a company is definitely a bottleneck. So the whole recruitment process is definitely a big bottleneck. I think it's not just a bottleneck on the corporate side or on the organization side. It's also a bottleneck on information and the perception of talent. So diversity attracts diversity. And if you're a company that doesn't have a lot of, you know, ethnic diversity, multicultural diversity, whatever term you prefer, then you're also much less likely to attract that talent, because nobody wants to be the only one or one of the few. So that's one big bottleneck. I think for talent that is already into the company, these are typically hardworking, you know, ceiling breaking talents already, right? They were the ones that were bold enough to go for these big companies and, you know, manage to be sort of the only one in their families, in their group of friends that went for this career. Often very ambitious, but when you come into a company and you feel different, a very natural reaction is that you say, well, I don't know how this works. I'm ambitious. I'm going to work really hard. I'm going to keep my head down, and then I'm going to let my work speak for me. And I think with that strategy, it's possible to move from a junior role to a senior role, because hard work does pay off and you do get sort of the recognition for that. But when it comes to leadership, then all of a sudden it's not about the hard work and it's not about the hard skills or the knowledge, or then it becomes about the person. And when it's about the person, then obviously bias has a huge role. But also, if you feel different and you've been sort of hard working, keeping your head down, not showing yourself enough, then people don't know who you are. And then it's even harder for them to trust you, because they already, you know, you're already the odd one out. So it's already hard to trust you. And then if you don't show yourself, it becomes extremely hard to trust you. So I think that transition from senior professional to leadership is extremely difficult for everyone, but especially for people that have a different ethnic background, cultural background.
Yeah, so they're up against so much already. It's not easy for anyone, but then to battle with those, well, as you say, biases, stereotypes. And then also that information gap or how would you call it? Sort of a lack of information that is shared. I talked to the founder of Female X Finance the other day on the podcast. This will be out by then, hopefully. What she talks a lot about, well, people share within their network information that they know, sort of insider's knowledge, but it doesn't get out. So lots of opportunities are lost because people only share within their own network how stuff works, how to get ahead, how to get that promotion, who to speak to, what to exactly do, and how to present, and that just gets lost.
That's the type of information that you can't learn in a book. It's the type of information that you only get from people that really, that are almost like family or dear friends, right? It's not information that you just give to anyone. So if within your family there's nobody that has that corporate experience and that knows how this game works, then that's a problem. And then if your group of friends is also either just trying to figure it out themselves and or doesn't have that corporate experience either, then it becomes extremely hard to get that information. And I think that's where sort of we try to play a role, right? Because and maybe this is a good hook to also share a bit more about what we do with Roots Inspire. But we got a group together of it's now over 80 ethnic corporate leaders, so people in senior leadership positions from various industries, but that all have ethnic backgrounds. And with them, we try to share this knowledge, their experience, try to show that there's not just one way to the top, but there's different profiles, different personalities, different styles that can all be successful, and try to share that with people that are climbing the ladder currently. And by doing that, we're hoping to increase the numbers. And we can see we've been very successful in that. And it's sort of working with talent. And then we also start to work with leadership now as sponsors of talent, because sponsoring is extremely important and it's something that doesn't happen naturally for this group. So we've been doing this push and pull strategy, mostly with multinationals, that is starting to pay off.
Yeah. such important work. I want to quiz you a little more on the specifics. Where are you currently working? I imagine it's mainly the Netherlands and the UK. Is that correct? So for people who are listening who would love to support your cause or even join that panel of experts that you have, could you share a little more about that?
Yeah, so when we started, so both me and my co-founder grew up in the Netherlands. So our heart is sort of in the Netherlands. But we also saw that a large group of our network was from the UK, because we've both had more of the expat careers. So we're active in the UK, the Netherlands, now becoming more active in Germany, Belgium, a bit of France. It's a virtual program. So it really fits well with multinationals that have multiple jurisdictions to worry about. And it's also been across industries, which to me was really interesting, right? Because when sort of my career in banking, I thought me being the only one and being part of this very, you know, very corporate, posh corporate environment, I thought that was a banking thing. And I thought more specifically that was like a corporate and investment banking type of thing. But now in our conversations with, you know, companies like Nike or Adidas or like cool brands that you would think from the outset are like, wow, those are, you know, so inclusive and so, you know, they really understand it. But if you look at the corporate top, it's not that much different.
Yeah. Incredibly important work. And I see off the top of my head of the companies that I can think of, they all would hugely benefit from what you're doing. And I hope that people are listening and thinking, if this is calling your name, please reach out. I think it's such a great work. I want to shift gears a little bit because on this podcast, we talk a lot about unbiased recruitment, giving equal chances to every candidate. Is that enough to bring more diversity into companies' leadership teams, do you think?
Well, asking the question is providing the answer already, right? No, I'm big on recruitment is not enough. And actually, I'm also a firm believer that if you focus on diverse recruitment, but you don't focus on proper talent management, you could potentially make things worse. Because if you bring someone in the team that is different and it's not a success, then everybody walks away from that situation where they said, oh, well, I tried and it didn't work. And, mm-hmm. you know, now they have sort of the scars for life and, just a bad experience that doesn't help. So I think it's extremely important that you work on sort of, well, corporate culture as well, but it's such a fake terminology, right? So yes, corporate cultures need to change, but how do corporate cultures actually change? It's not like you can put everyone on an inclusive leadership training and now all of a sudden, you know, you change the corporate culture. So we're very much on the mission to change the numbers. I think essentially you are going to change corporate cultures if you get to a critical mass. And to get to a critical mass, you need the strategy, you need the resilience, you need to, make sure you stick to the game plan for, I think, at least 5 years to get to those numbers. So yes, recruitment is a big part of the solution. It's not the solution. I think the whole talent management cycle, including talent acquisition, is needed to get this right.
Yeah, very apt what you said, asking the questions, providing the answers. I think it is a question that people have a lot around, well, how do you do things the right way without hurting your cause? And as you mentioned, you can do a lot of damage by just bringing bringing a diversity target to the table and say, okay, let's, in the next 6 months, let's just hire two people that are different from us in whatever dimension that is in our conversation now, well, from different ethnic backgrounds. That can do a lot more damage than it can do good, especially because it puts so much weight on those on the shoulders of the people that are hired to educate their peers that they just received in coming into this new company of how to open themselves up in that way. So it puts way too much responsibility on individuals versus the organization.
What organizations can do is like, so one is manage, like it's what they call the diversity paradox, right? So if we're let's say a group of guys that all agree really quickly and we have a meeting and we make some decisions and then we all go to the golf course to celebrate how efficient we are, it feels like a super efficient team, and it feels like, you know, it feels like, yeah, you're performing as a team. Whereas if you have a more diverse team and every decision is maybe a bit difficult because there's all these different opinions and, you know, what you think is a great idea, there might be other perspectives that show that, hey, maybe it's not a great idea, or maybe it needs to be sharpened a bit more. Then people feel like it's, you know, it takes such a long time to make decisions and we're not efficient as a team. And we're, whereas actually the end result is a much sharper idea, a much better considered idea, a much more sustainable decision. And so the diversity paradox is that diversity doesn't feel efficient, but it is efficient and better. Whereas just a group of sort of the same feels super efficient, but there's groupthink, right? Like there's, so I think managing diverse teams, I think what organizations can do much better is celebrating that and acknowledging how difficult that is. And the managers that are doing that, you know, like put them on a pedestal and give them a medal for doing what they're doing. And then on the other hand, what we need to realize is that being the only one in a team is just extremely tiring. And it can be a very lonely journey. And there's a lot of talent, both gender and ethnic and, you know, other forms of diversity as well, that are questioning whether they want to do this, whether they want to go to the next level and, you know, deal with all that pressure of representing a whole group. So that talent needs to be nurtured because it's very, very valuable to the organization. But you need to make sure that they're seen, that they're heard, invested in, that they have a group of peers, maybe not, you know, within the company, but externally, and that they feel they're not the only ones doing this.
Yeah. So a lot of support is needed to make that shift that companies are needing to make a sustainable one. What else would you then advise recruitment professionals and HR professionals who are probably listening to this conversation right now to increase diversity at the top level of an organization in a way that's not hurting their cause in the end?
Yeah. So, you know, where I think the tools you provide as well, right, where it's taken out the bias out of recruitment, I think they can be extremely strong. But I think what we also need to consider is that when we hire, especially at leadership level, you need to deliberately hire for culture add and not culture fit. So just ignoring someone's background or taking that out of the equation, you know, maybe in some steps of the process it's very valuable, but if you're really deliberate about building a diverse leadership team, you actually need to look at the team and see, hey, what is missing here? And what do we need? What perspective is underrepresented here? And I think with gender, people are, it's much easier for people to understand that. Because with gender, you know, we sort of all accept that, oh, yeah, women and men look at the world differently. And if we're here sitting with a group of four guys, it probably makes sense to also have the perspective of a woman, and it probably adds value. But with ethnicity, that's a much more sensitive topic, where we all grew up saying, like, you know, being taught that, oh, yeah, skin color doesn't matter, and you should look at everyone the same. And so that has become a core value of us. But I always see that as like throwing out the baby with the bathwater, right? So the intention is good, but we also need to realize that we just have very, very different life experiences. And in the Netherlands, we like to talk about cultural diversity because it's less sensitive than ethnic diversity. But I can tell you, we have people on our program that have been adopted and that have grown up somewhere in a very posh, you know, white environment and understand that culture perfectly well, but still have a vastly different life experience just because of the color of their skin. And that's the reality of it, but that's also the beauty of it, right? There's such power in that different life experience, because that is what's adding value. That's a perspective that is not, that's underrepresented at that table. So being more deliberate about what perspective is missing and how you can add that to the team, I think that's, in many cases, that is an even better approach than ignoring someone's background and just looking at the skills, right? If it's purely about the skills and the knowledge, then I'm sure ChatGPT can do a great job. But leadership is all about people, perspectives, decisions that go all over the place that are not linked to just one hard skill or one competence. That's I think what recruiters can do better.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful add-on to conversations that I've been having around, well, how do you take the bias out of the recruitment process? Yes, that's all valid for junior positions, media positions, for positions where skills are still more important than the personality or the lived experience that they come with. But as soon as you hit that leadership level, as you say, it's so much about looking at what can this person bring to the table? What lived experience do they have? What expertise do they bring outside of all of the hard requirements that we have on this list in our minds?
Absolutely.
I think that's a wonderful add-on to that conversation. And I want to end the conversation here on this note. I think it's a very inspiring note, a very practical note, I think, and a bit of a reality check for all of us. And that's what we need at the moment, I think, the most. With that, I really want to thank you for having this conversation with me, for being so generous with your time and giving this conversation body and sort of a life on its own. And I think that's what it needed. I hope you enjoyed our conversation.
Absolutely, Katarina. It was a pleasure to join you with this, and amazing work you and the team are doing. So happy to support.
Amazing. I hope we're going to see a lot more of you. I'm going to be an advocate internally as well for that. I think you have so much more to share, which we don't have time for today. But I will include all of the links to Roots Inspired, to your LinkedIn, if people feel called to it and feel that moral imperative that I also feel to contribute, then I will tell them to reach out. If you're listening today and you really enjoyed this episode, do let us know what you took away from this, what you learned from this. And don't hesitate to reach out to either me or Sergio. And I hope to see you in the next one. Goodbye.